You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And joining us on Perspectives today is award-winning, best-selling author David Baldacci. David Baldacci is a global number one best-selling author. His books are published in over 45 languages and in more than 80 countries with over 110 million copies in print. His works have been adapted for both feature film and television. David Baldacci is also the co-founder, along with his wife, of the Wish You Well Foundation. We'll talk about that as well. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting literacy efforts across America. Still a resident of his native Virginia, he invites you to visit him at his website, and that is www.davidbaldacci.com. David, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, your new book is called The Escape, and it's the third, I believe, in the trilogy of the Robert Puller books. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and we'll talk about the first book and kind of take us through. But first of all, for the benefit of our audience, David, a lot of people are familiar with your books, and you've written for young adults and for adults, and you know, you've written for everybody, as I just mentioned there, and how your books have been translated. But tell us a little bit about your background, and when did you first decide that you were going to become a writer, or were you interested ever since you were a child?
I was. I was sort of one of those kids that never shut up, and my mom gave me a blank page book and, you know, asked me to start writing some of these stories down. I'm sure she did it just to keep me quiet, but I fell in love with putting words down on a piece of paper and really started writing short stories when I was in high school and college and trying to get this published, and got lots of rejections along the way. And I continued writing those types of stories on into law school and then practicing law, and tried my hand at screenplay writing and had an agent out in L.A. and got a couple of scripts optioned, and then went through a number of novels where I never finished them. I started and just stopped midway through, and then I had an idea for what became my first published novel, Absolute Power. I was working in D.C. as a lawyer. I was near the White House. I would see the president's motorcade sometimes, see the Secret Service, and this idea for the story came to me, and it was a huge success, and, you know, it was very serendipitous. I didn't have this grand plan to be a best-selling thriller writer. It was just a story I was interested in, but it really launched my career.
Now, David, we've heard stories about the Beatles when they were talking about their anthology, the missing Beatle tapes, the missing documents of so-and-so, and you talked about being a writer since you were a child, a kid. Do you remember what you wrote or some of those stories that you wrote as a child?
Yeah, they were very much, they were not mysteries. They were very much about character, place, and connections between people. There was one about a young man on a train sitting down in a seat next to an older woman, and he was wondering, is this my long-lost grandmother? And he had sort of this interior dialogue in his head about it and interaction with her, and when the story was done, you really weren't sure. Was it his grandmother or not? And what was he really trying to seek out? What was he really trying to find? So it was really more stories along those lines that didn't have any definite closure to them, but explored sort of human nature and how we interact with each other. And that's what really drove me to wanting to be a writer, because you get to explore all these things in words.
We're visiting with David Baldacci, a best-selling author. His recent book is The Escape. It's the third in the Robert Puller series, and we'll talk a little bit about that book in just a minute. But we are visiting with David Baldacci. David talked about a perfect segue that we can do here, because you mentioned a story about riding in a train. And the first book I read by you is, I believe it's called The Christmas Train. And I was kind of surprised, because I had heard a lot about your writing, your thrillers. And when I read that book, I said, well, this is very different. I guess I must have chosen the wrong author. But I enjoyed that book very much. And then I went, of course, and read some of your other books. But tell us about the story behind The Christmas Train.
I took a train ride a long time ago on two trains. And I was going to go to the West Coast. I had a speaking engagement, and I was finishing up a book. And I just wanted like 3 days by myself, no interruptions, no phones, no faxes, nothing. And I took the Capital Limited from D.C. to Chicago, and the Southwest Chief from Chicago to L.A., went across the country. And, you know, you don't spend all the time working, so I would go to the dining car, I'd meet people, talk, go to the observation car, and listen to stories people were saying. By the time I got to L.A., I had like 50 pages of notes, and I flew back home, and I thought, I'm going to set this at Christmas, even though it was like during the fall when I went across, and build a story into it that I just come up with, but sort of give a flavor in the atmosphere for what it's like to take a cross-country train tour. And never would have happened except I, you know, decided to take a train for real and ended up getting a story out of it.
We're visiting with the top best-selling author, David Baldacci. His recent novel is The Escape, third in the Robert Puller trilogy. We have been talking about the Robert Pohler trilogy, and for people who may not be familiar with your work, would you bring us in with Robert Pohler, the character, and talk a little bit about that first novel? So, of course, we don't want to give anything away, but so that people can, you know, better understand what this book's all about.
Yeah, you know, the Pohlers are an interesting family. John Pohler is an Army investigator. He came up the ranks. He's enlisted. He has a father who's a legendary three-star, retired now, who has dementia. And then there's Robert Pohler, who was an Air Force major, who was convicted of national security crimes. And in the first book, Zero Day, you meet the two brothers. John is going to visit Robert in prison. He's at the maximum security prison in Leavenworth, Kansas. And they have an interesting dynamic. You got one guy who's on the side of law enforcement, and the other one who's in prison, and a father who obviously doesn't know what's going on because he's suffering from a debilitating illness. And going from Zero Day, where Robert gives John a little bit of help in that case because it was connected with some specialities that Robert Pohler had, intelligence, nuclear weaponry. And then you get to The Forgotten, which is a case that John Pohler took on in Florida with another family member, at the core of that. And then in The Escape, obviously you can tell from the title that Robert Pohler escapes from the maximum security prison at Leavenworth. And John Pohler, because he knows his brother so well, and his brother is a very high-profile KP, he's like the most wanted man in America because he's all these secrets about America's national security defenses in his head from when he worked there. He has to be caught before an enemy of the country gets him. And they bring in John Pohler, and you have brother hunting down brother.
We're speaking with bestselling author David Baldacci, the author of the recent novel, The Escape. David, when you write these characters, and as you mentioned, the brothers, but then their dad, just the little bit that we know about him through the books, he is a very interesting man, and I'm sure that you've been approached about this before, but some people might wonder, their father seems like a very interesting man. I wonder if David has ever thought or is going to write a little bit about the career of their dad.
Definitely I will, because a big part of doing this sort of family dynamic was to explore all the Pohlers, and John Pohler Sr., the retired three-star, is a big part of that. And there's a story that I foreshadowed in this book about the Pohler's mother. You never really heard a lot about her, that I really will have a payoff in a later book about that, and that will bring sort of full bore, one, the backstory for Pohler Sr., but also the childhood of the two boys, Robert and John, growing up with their father and with their mother. So you'll get sort of the full realm of the experiences from those years ago.
So we have a lot of reading ahead of us. We're visiting with David Baldacci. He is the best-selling author of thrillers, a young adult fiction. The Escape is the latest book. And David Baldacci also has, if you're familiar with the Pohler brothers and John Pohler Sr., the General Pohler, as he just discussed, he also has other characters like the King and Maxwell. When you're developing characters like this, David, how do you know, as far as when do you decide that it's time to follow up with another book, or it's time to cut it off, or to create different people so that they don't sound or look much like your other characters? Tell us about the King and Maxwell.
Yeah, there's quite a bit there. I mean, sometimes I will come up with a plot, and I think, well, you know, if I want to do this as a standalone, or do I want to do it as a series? And I'll look at who's best to do it for the series. Is it the military matter? Certainly John Pohler. If it's something sort of quirky that requires an ensemble, I would look at the Camel Club. If it was something a little more lighthearted where I can have some chemistry going back and forth between the two leads, it would be a King and Maxwell. Sometimes I decide, well, I've got this really great plot, but I want it to be a brand new character. The spring novel will come out next year. That's what happened, because it's a new character, because really the story, the backstory, his backstory was integral to the entire plot. So it had to be a new character, sort of, you know, living in that story. I do have options and choices, obviously, because I have so many series going. But I always have, which I did for my first dozen books, you know, the option that I could just be a standalone one book only.
We're speaking with David Baldacci. He is the author of the recent book, The Escape. We touched briefly on this latest novel, David, but The Escape, as you mentioned, obviously it deals with the escape of the Pohler brother from the detention facility that the military detention facility that he's in. But you want to kind of tell us a little bit more about this book, kind of give us a tease?
Yeah, Robert Pohler has been in prison for several years on national security crime, and he'll be there for his whole life. He's a high-profile prisoner, and DB, where he is the maximum security prison the military has. It's run by the Army, although prisoners from all service branches are sent there, all male. And it's inescapable. No one's ever escaped from this place before, but one very stormy night, something happens. It's just like this confluence of action that were initially started by other people, allows Robert Pohler the opportunity to get away, and he takes it. And mean, at that point, we don't know, you know, why. We don't know what this other confluence of events, what's behind that. And we don't know if Robert Pueller's guilty or innocent of the crimes. We assume he's guilty because he was convicted. Then he gets away and changes his appearance and goes on the run and starts doing a number of really extraordinary things. It makes us wonder what is his agenda. And at that same time, John Pueller's brought in. It seems sort of weird you'd send a brother after a brother, but they need to get this guy as quickly as possible, and they feel like nobody knows Robert Pueller better than his brother John Pueller, because the brothers have kept in touch throughout his prison term. John visited them often. So they bring him in as sort of, you know, a first-ditch effort to get this guy. And so they send brother after brother.
We're speaking with David Baldacci, the author of the recent novel, The Escape. The Escape is one of the best-selling novels already in the New York Times bestseller list. And this is the third book in the Pueller series, and it's as David just mentioned, it involves the escape of the Pueller brother from the military detention, and we'll kind of leave it at that because you get very interested in the way you develop your characters, David, is very interesting. You bring back a lot of old characters, former characters, not old characters, but you also bring in some new characters and introduce them to some new people. Now, the listener is reading this novel, and they get to the part where John Pueller is meeting with the top brass, and you hear all these stories going on behind the scenes. People might wonder, gosh, is this really what goes on behind scenes in high-level government? And, of course, you worked in D.C. for a long time, so people may ask you, Mr. Baldacci, is this some of the things you may have observed or heard when you were in D.C.?
Yeah, I take my research really seriously, and I go out, interview people, and go to the places I write about, do some of the things that my characters in the novels do. When I immersed myself in the military world, I went down to Fort Benning where the infantry trained, spent 3 days down there with the Rangers doing some of the physical stuff they do and interviewing dozens of people and seeing a lot of things firsthand for myself. And as a lawyer in D.C. and also as a novelist who's written about this world for a long time, I've got a lot of contacts in all the alphabet agencies, and I go and interview people and talk to them, see things that I can see and travel to places that I can travel to. So my books are very authentic and real in that regard. I'm writing a novel, but a lot of stuff that's in my book is actually nonfiction. And I try to lay my fictional world on top of a really solid foundation of facts.
We're visiting with David Baldacci. He is the New York Times bestselling author, and the recent novel is The Escape. Sometimes, David, when authors are successful like yourself, there will be screenplay adaptations, there'll be television adaptations, and you have had that success because Clint Eastwood picked up the first book, correct?
Yeah, he directed and starred in Absolute Power with Gene Hackman. Great film. It was great to sort of work with them on that. Right out of the gate, it was quite something. And I've had another feature film made of my book that I actually wrote the script for, Wish You Well, will be out later next year. A TV series I had done on my King and Maxwell characters on TNT last year. And I've got a couple of other films in development for feature, including a young adult fantasy that I wrote that came out earlier this year. So there's a lot on the plate there. My main, you know, job is I write novels. And if they get adapted for film and television, that's terrific. I mean, it's a lot of fun for the fans to see the characters and the action on the screen. But, you know, I always go back to the book.
David, I'm glad you brought that up because a lot of times people will look and say, you know, I haven't read the book, but I'm going to wait for the movie. And you and I know, you know, as readers, as writers, the fact that, you know, there's a lot more in the book. And sometimes we kind of cringe when we see something on the screen because we're going, that's not the way I imagined this character to look like, or that's not the way I wrote him in there. Is that a problem with you as far as when you see something like that on the screen, or has it been pretty much up to par?
Writing screenplays myself, I understand the difficulty taking a 400-page book and turning into a 90-page screenplay. Obviously, a lot of stuff has to be left out. Characters get pared down. Subplots are vanished. It's two different mediums, and I guess the writer has the ultimate say. The novelist, they don't have to sell it to Hollywood, but if they do, then they have to sort of stand, you know, outside of it and let them do what they do. And hopefully what I try to do is I get people who are involved in the film who want to do it, and I really talk to them, try to learn their vision for it. And if their vision for the film, the story sort of coincides with mine, then I'll move forward with them. And that's the best protection I think a writer can have, is to just build people around them into the system that really share your values with what you want the story to be, and then let them go off and do what they do, which is making a film. It doesn't do any good to sell it and then complain about it later. You just try to do the best you can and surround yourself with really good people to share your vision.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author David Baldacci. The recent novel is The Escape. David, what about audiobooks? That's a genre that has been catching on quickly.
I love audiobooks, and I've got two great readers that have done probably over the last 9 or 10. In fact, last year, or this year, the Target won the Audi for Best Thriller, Rob McLarty and Orlog Cassidy, and they just do a great job. And even though I know how the stories are going to end, I sometimes sit in my car with an engine running just to see how it's going to turn out, because they don't just read it. They perform it, and there's a difference. They do something that I can't do on the written page. They give you a performance.
And that's something that some people, older people who listen to audiobooks say, you know, it's kind of like old-time radio dramas, because they act them out and they have the sound effects. And sometimes, as you mentioned, you want to stay on that bus or that train or wherever just so you can hear the rest of that story.
Oh, absolutely. It's just another thing, another facet of the story that I'm not able to do as a writer, but the actors performing the audiobook can do. And it just, it's... reading the book and reading the audiobook, just two different experiences.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author David Baldacci. His most recent work is The Escape. I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, David, that you and your wife have the Wish You Well Foundation. You want to tell us a little bit about that foundation?
Yeah, we formed it about 15 years ago and put a lot of money into it. And we have a board of directors, and we review applications. We get probably 5,000 or 6,000 a year from organizations across the country who do literacy programs in their communities. We fund as many as we can. We funded, you know, programs in probably all 50 states and counting. And we also have a book collection effort we call Feeding Body and Mind. When I go on book tour, I send these big white boxes ahead. My fans fill them up with books, and then those boxes are sent to local area food banks, because illiteracy and poverty go hand in hand. If you're going to seek food assistance, chances are your reading skills are low, and so that's why you don't have a well-paying job. So to try to break that cycle, we try to get the books in the hands of people who may never have had a book, or the kids may never have had a book.
One of the people who has helped out a lot in the literary world as well is James Patterson, and he donated a lot of money to local mom-and-pop booksellers. But he has gone down to also reaching out to young adults, as have you. Tell us about, you know, how different is it shifting gears from writing these thrillers to writing for young adults?
Well, I tell you, you got to bring your A game, that's for sure. I mean, kids are too smart these days. They see too much stuff, so... as far as plotting and character development, I really had to write it as if it were an adult novel. I might make some different word choices, vocabulary, but for the most part, it's trying to tell a very engaging story that will try to enthrall a very sophisticated set of readers. And there are a lot of books out there, and that readers, you know, young readers read and excite them. So there's a lot of competition for that. But yeah, you definitely have to bring your A game. I never write down to kids. That's a huge mistake.
And do you feel that a lot of young people are starting to read more?
Well, I think so. And they also have different devices they can read on. You know, they can read on their iPhone now if they want, or on a tablet or on a laptop. And, you know, before we know it, we'll have Google Glasses. You can read a whole novel on a pair of glasses. Who knows where it's going to end up? Or, you know, they could just download it right to your brain in 5 years. it's kind of weird. But the important thing is that, you know, kids do need to read, because reading just adds a facet to your life that is just invaluable. I'm a writer today because I was a reader as a kid. And I know how that changed my life. I know how it can change every kid's life.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author David Baldacci. His most recent work is The Escape. And we've been reviewing the various novels that he's written. We've been talking about reading for children. We've been talking about his foundation. And speaking of reading, sometimes people will say, well, you know, I don't have time to read these big, thick books. And of course, some people see that as a challenge. You know, my daughter read Pride and Prejudice at the age of 9. And so she really enjoys reading. But some people say, well, I really prefer a short story. And you have written some short stories, and one of them is that comes to mind is Bullseye. Tell us about how difficult it is to write a short story as opposed to a novel.
You know, short stories are not easy because they're short. They're more difficult because they're short, which means you have to compress everything you would want in a full-length novel into far fewer pages, and there's no room for error. There's no room to hide any weaknesses in the story or their character development. You have to do everything faster, but you have to do it just as well as you would do in 400 pages, and to do it in 20 pages or 50 pages or 70 pages. It's a great challenge for a writer, and one reason I like to do that is because it takes me out of my comfort zone and makes me a better writer, because I know that every single word really, really counts. It counts in a novel, but it super well counts in a short story, because you have far fewer of the words to work with. It's almost like your quiver is one quarter full. But it makes for a challenge, and if you do it right, it can be quite exciting, and it can be a really pleasurable experience for the reader. And I hope the Bullseye was for people. You know, I took two different characters from two different series and combined them into one. It's like crossing the streams in a television series. So it was a lot of fun, something I had never done before, and I liked the challenge.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author David Baldacci. David is the author of the recent book, The Escape. It's the third in the John and Robert Poehler trilogy. It has been out for a couple of weeks now, but it's a very well-written book, as so as the other ones, and it's available on audio. It's available as an ebook. It's available on Kindle and, you know, wherever you can get your books. Again, the name of the book is The Escape. Getting back to what we talked about at the beginning, David, about the inside scoop, and some of your earlier books have dealt with the president inside the Washington and protecting the president. And people might wonder, is this what really happens inside the circles of the White House and the some of the things that the president has to be careful, the terrorists, the attacks, and of course, people recently have been talking about Ebola and what may happen if that spreads nationwide.
It's a complicated equation, and you have human beings in the middle of it, and human beings are not perfect. Mistakes are made. I think we've seen several of those, certainly with the Secret Service in recent months. And the presidency is a job that's really impossible for a human being to do, but because the Constitution says we have to elect a president every 4 years, we do. And the person who has that office does as best as he or she can, and they have to live in that world, in that bubble. And so the president wants to be accessible to people, but there are lots of threats against him, you know, more now than ever, so he has to be protected as well. There's that really delicate balance. Sometimes they get it right, sometimes they don't. But I couldn't imagine the itinerary of a president. I mean, most people think they have a tough day when they have a bunch of stuff to do. You know, a president these days has, a you know, 15 national and international crises every, like, 5 hours. He has to make decisions on. And it just, it goes beyond human capability, really. But somebody has to do it. And I think that's why you see when president goes in with dark hair, he comes out with white hair.
Exactly. It's been 51 years. It's hard to believe that President Kennedy was gunned down in Dallas. And a lot of your books deal with the fact, you know, protecting the president and some of the dangers that he or she in the future faces. How realistic are those things, and how is it become a little bit more difficult for the president to get around?
Oh, it has. I mean, I look back at pictures of, you know, Harry Truman walking out the White House gate with one guy with him walking, and walks around town, just wanted to get out. And even with Kennedy, you know, riding around in an open air car, I mean, today that's unthinkable. And all the people, the army that goes with the president wherever he is these days, unfortunately, it's just the way the world is. It's changed quite a bit over the course of certainly my lifetime, and I don't think there's any going back. If anything, the security measures will probably just get even more tighter. We see, you know, more and more things where people jumping fences and firing at the White House. It's dangerous, and we can't let anything happen to a president anymore. We've seen what happens when those events occur. They're tragic. They're incredibly harmful to the whole world because, you know, they, the U.S. is a target, and letting people succeed and hurting us in that way, you know, is not good for people who love freedom. So the security net's only going to get tighter. It's not going to get any looser.
David, thank you very much for spending the time to be with us today. We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author David Baldacci. David is the author of the recent book, The Escape. You can also go to davidbaldacci.com to find out more information about his books and also about the Wishwell Foundation. David, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
This is Primetime Postscript. I'm Mike Cuthbert. The hats we wear can say a lot about us. They display our fashion priorities and keep our heads warm. At the Hat Museum in Portland, Oregon, guided tours explore more than 1,300 hats, one of the world's largest collections. Scott Schlegel went along.
In one of Portland's oldest neighborhoods behind an iron gate, the historic Ladd Rheingold House looks out on tree-lined streets where women wearing wide-brimmed Edwardian hats once strolled. Proprietor and curator Alice Cronin Selby greets guests in costume at the front door. A few weeks before Halloween, she's dressed in black and wearing an Edwardian-style hat.
And it's the Edwardian hats that are the big hats. So think Hello, Dolly, My Fair Lady, Downton Abbey. Those are not Victorian hats. Those are Edwardian-style hats. There's feathers, there's flowers, there's netting all on this one hat, and there's plenty of feathers on this hat.
Edwardians are among the largest, most colorful, and flamboyant hats here, a collection Cronin Selby calls the finest in the world.
This is a full-spectrum museum. There are a lot of hat museums that specialize in just hats that were made in that area. There is a hat museum in Massachusetts. The hats that they display are the ones that were made in that area. Same thing is true in England. So to my knowledge, this is the only museum that has full spectrum, men's hats, women's hats, the silly hat section, and the international hats.
An entire room is devoted to silly hats. Another room features men's hats, the Hamburg, the Panama, the fedora, the top hat, the boss, and the beret, nearly every men's hat you can think of. It's easy to see history in men's hats, our guide explains, and she calls it a complete misnomer that men stopped wearing dress hats after President Kennedy took off his hat during his inauguration in 1961.
He delivered his address, but his hat is sitting in the seat right behind him, if you notice in the photographs. And he wore the hat in the parade. The only time he doffed his hat was when he passed his father. So the hat figured in that day.
It's more likely, she says, that men's hats went out of fashion for a variety of other reasons. Hats reminded returning war veterans of helmets. The cost of hat check was adding up, and some men thought wearing a hat would make them go bald.
There was a lot of people that thought that, and so they didn't want to go bald, so they decided they weren't going to wear their hats anymore. There is no correlation, but it's the perception. This was especially in the 20s and 30s. So you see, you put all of those things together, and pretty soon it's like, oh, well, I'm just not going to wear a hat anymore.
At Lulu's, a vintage clothing shop near Powell's Books in Portland, proprietor Ann Lulu Weiland says there's a resurgence of customers looking for vintage hats.
I have both men and women coming in looking for hats. Men a lot of times want a fedora. Women like things with veils because it adds a little bit of allure and mystery. The intriguing thing is that our heads have grown besides the rest of our bodies. And so a lot of the vintage hats don't fit modern heads anymore.
There are still hatters and milliners in Portland who custom make hats, but the industry is nothing like it once was, with hat shops almost as common as coffee shops. Lulu started an annual hat parade to celebrate hats, as well as style, individuality, and creativity.
My favorite hat was an oilcloth hat with a movie in it of a running horse. So it actually played a movie.
The Silly Hats Room is the Hat Museum's most entertaining exhibit.
Hello, trick-or-treaters!
There's even a Thanksgiving dinner table hat with a stuffed cloth turkey and vegetables that light up.
Hats just make a huge statement no matter what. I mean, if you're wearing an Easter bonnet or you're wearing a baseball cap backwards, anything that's worn on the head has much more of an impact than anything else you can possibly wear.
Alice Cronin Selby guides tours of the Hat Museum for no more than six at a time and by reservation only. Go to thehatmuseum.com. For Primetime Postscript, I'm Scott Schlegel.
This has been Primetime Postscript made possible by AARP, and today, Scott Schlegel. Hear more postscripts and see pictures on our website, aarp.org/radio.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.